But I'm Alex Desitel from the Alameda County Public Health Department, and I also want to thank everyone for being here in this last session because I know these days can be long. And I want to start off by recognizing some of the people. I'm up here presenting, but the work I'm presenting, I can take probably less than 1% of the credit for. So I just want to point out some of the people who are here that have really been instrumental in this work. So Pam Willow, Kathy Schaaf, Kimmy Watkins-Tart, these are all people who have been really instrumental in helping us get our local policy work off the ground. And so if I'm not able to answer any questions, they probably know more than I do, so please ask them. Okay, so addressing the root causes of health inequities through a local policy agenda. These are all the people right now in our department who are engaged in our local policy work, and we have no relationships to disclose. Okay. The goal of my presentation today is to demonstrate to you all how our department, the Alameda County Public Health Department, is engaging in a process for creating and implementing a local policy agenda. I'm going to start off with a little bit of background around our project, then I'll go into how we've built our local policy agenda, and then talk a little bit about implementation. Okay, so I'll look at first briefly at why Alameda County Public Health Department started working in local policy to address health inequities. The upper line in this graph is life expectancy for Alameda County's white residents between 1960 and 2005, and the lower line is that for African American residents during the same time period. Life expectancy for other groups are left off of this map because they were not collected by the census until 1990. So as you can see, the life expectancy of both racial groups is rising, yet the gap between the two groups is increasing. Again, on this map, just as in race, we see differences in life expectancy when we look at place and class. Alameda County is very diverse, but it is also very segregated by race and class, and poor health outcomes are distributed along these lines. And so the areas that are the darker brown are the areas that you can see concentrated poverty. So our local policy work is part of our strategy for addressing these unjust differences in health outcomes, but the question is, why a focus on policy? We know that in order to effectively make that map all one color, or to ensure that the life expectancy trend lines cross as they continue to rise, we need to address social inequities. And at the Alameda County Public Health Department, when we talk about social inequities, we are talking about the inequities in areas like housing, transportation, education, all of the different social determinants you see on this slide. So what is it within our department that allowed us to get our local policy work off the ground? The first thing I'm going to talk about is leadership. Moving into local policy work is tricky, and as a result, it's one of the reasons that we've put a lot of our work into creating a strong methodology that will support our work if something comes up that rocks the boat. However, even with strong research, community support, a strong methodology, moving into some of these areas is going to take a willingness to take risks. So we're lucky to have a director and health officer, Dr. Tony Eiten, who is willing to go out on a limb and challenge the status quo, as well as our director before him, Arnold Perkins, who encouraged staff to ask for forgiveness, not for permission. So that's kind of one of the leadership contexts. But generally, leaders come and go, and so we're also really lucky to have a strategic plan that supports this work. Over the past 2 years, we went through a strategic planning process with the participation from across our county, including residents, community groups, staff, the Health Commission, Board of Supervisors, really from every corner in the county. And in the end, we generated 6 strategic directions, with the 5th being advocate for policies that address the social conditions impacting health. Additionally, our local policy work is not the only part of our work to address health inequities. It's part of a 3-pronged strategy, and that's our strategy. So you can see on the outside, we have community capacity building, institutional change, and policy change with multi-directional areas. Our policy efforts are informed by and inform our community capacity building efforts, which are intended to build resident power, shift from institutional power to resident power, and drive change. Our institutional efforts are intended to move our department toward addressing the social determinants of health and include a Public Health 101 training program for our staff. And like I said, the arrows are multidimensional, and it's important to note that right now, the way these efforts work together is somewhat informal, but we are moving to try to really formalize them. And I think this presentation specifically will highlight the relationship between our policy change and our institutional change efforts. Additionally, we have a newly released report, which I hope you all will access online at our website. This report is not only building our internal understanding of the links between social and health inequities, but has increased our visibility and credibility as local experts on these issues. So it's really propelled us to the forefront in our area. I want to say that there's one more organizational context that I'm embarrassed I forgot to include, which is we have a long history of engaging in state and federal issues through our legislative council, led by Pam Willow, who's here, and it's been around for a number of years. However, we determined that its structure was not exactly right for local policy efforts because they're a different beast and they require a different kind of pace for responsiveness. So, okay. Our local policy work is currently coordinated through our Place Matters Initiative, which is part of the National Place Matters Initiative of the Joint Center for Political Economic Studies Health Policy Institute and funded by the W.K. Kellogg Foundation. The goal of this large national project is to improve health of participating communities by addressing social conditions that lead to poor health. As Alameda County partner in this initiative, we have created our own kind of vision for it, and it's to promote health equity through community-centered local policy agenda focused on education, economic development, housing, incarceration, land use, and transportation. And so our work with the local policy started as part of a project. In the rest of this presentation, I will show how we're moving from keeping that work siloed in one little project and trying to spread it throughout the department. And I just want to speak briefly about the term community-centered because people often have questions about that term. And it's our intention to create a process that ensures that our agenda is supported and engages the community, that we are not just assuming we know what is best and contributing to the disempowerment of our residents. And I also want to point out that our policy work right now, even though our county includes 14 cities, it's focused on just one jurisdiction, and that's Oakland, where we see the greatest, the poorest health outcomes and the greatest inequities. However, once this project is established there, we hope to expand it to the rest of the county. Okay, so like I showed you in the last slide, our goal here is to promote health equity, and I believe even in a previous iteration of our goal, we set out to achieve health equity, which is quite lofty, and I think we all realize that that's probably not something that we're going to achieve even in our lifetimes. So we really are also focusing on our process goals, and we believe that by designing a process that changes the way we do business, that builds cross-sector relationships, that meaningfully engages residents, and helps us break out of silos, that we will help create the conditions necessary for driving structural change forward. So here's our process for building the local policy agenda. And while it's kind of still a little bit complicated, it's a far cry from where we started with arrows going in every direction. And I just want to point out that while it looks relatively simple, it did not start out. When we started out, our thinking was not nearly as clean or linear. So the first step of our process is a needs assessment. There are three components of our needs assessment: literature review, baseline indicators, and key informant interviews. Each one of these pieces informs the next, and that's why there's these multi-directional arrows. For instance, if our key informant interview revealed that overcrowding is a problem in Oakland, then we would make sure to include research on the links between overcrowding and health outcomes in our literature review. So we just used each component to inform the next. There's one needs assessment per policy area. Like I said, they're mutually informing components. And the outputs include full report and summary documents, preliminary policy assessment tools, which I will describe next, relationships, buy-in, and partner awareness. And as a result of a lot of these relationships and buy-in, we began to receive requests for policy analysis and testimony. So I'll just highlight one example now. We recently received a request from our partner working on transportation justice to testify on the potential health impacts of a proposed 86% fare increase on youth and disabled bus passes. In part because of our testimony and the testimony of youth engaged in our community capacity building work, Oakland Youth Movement, I don't know. There are some representatives of them here, so you should look out for it. It's an amazing project. The bus transit provider agreed to put off the fare increases until other proposals for generating revenue were considered. Now, this wasn't a huge win, but it was really great that we got the feedback from the partners who we worked with, that the decision makers let them know that our testimony and the testimony of the youth was very instrumental in their decision to put off the fare increase until they explored all the other options. And right now there's a measure on our ballot to try and raise revenue another way. So our policy assessment tools were generated by our needs assessment. Right now they're preliminary policy assessment tools because they're also going to be informed by our stakeholder engagement process, which I'll describe later. Our policy platform. The goal of the policy platform consists of a goal statement for each one of the policy areas I listed at the beginning of the presentation. And the purpose of the function of the policy platform is to communicate to the general public our overall vision of where we are trying to go in our county. However, the policy criteria are more specific and they're for internal use. They are going to help us assess policies for inclusion in our local policy agenda. And like I said, they're informed by the needs assessments and the stakeholder engagement process. So here is an example of our policy assessment tools. In our needs assessment, we found that cost burden, which is dedicating more than 30% of your income to housing, is associated with poor nutrition, displacement, homelessness, community instability, et cetera, and that an increasing percentage of Oakland households are experiencing cost burden. So when we created our draft policy platform, we were sure to incorporate in that last area there a reference to this finding. So no household resides in overcrowded conditions, is homeless, or resorts to spending more than 30% of income on housing costs. And that in turn was translated into a policy criteria that reads, will this policy decrease the number of households experiencing cost burden? So that's our way of incorporating our findings into how we're looking at policies for our policy agenda. But it's important to note that there are a number of policy criteria for each one of our policy areas, and that just because a policy doesn't meet the criteria that we lay out does not mean that we will not include it in our local policy agenda, because there could be reasons for including it, such as maybe we need to engage around this policy to build the relationships necessary for pursuing other policies later on. However, our intention is that the majority of our policy work will be aligned with our policy criteria. Okay, and our stakeholder engagement process. Like I said, it informs the policy assessment tools, but it serves many other purposes and really is the most important component of creating our local policy agenda. And I should point out that this is currently where we are at in our process. We haven't made it to the end. We're still going through it. So resident engagement. We are going to be engaging existing resident groups and people receiving services through the Alameda County Public Health Department. And what we're hoping to do through this engagement is not only provide an opportunity for meaningful engagement, but to help us prioritize issues within each policy area. So for in any given policy area, say housing, there are many issues, habitability, affordability, and so on. And we can't address everything at once, so we would like to find out what are the experiences of residents and what is most salient with residents and ensure that we address those issues first. We also hope to build relationships. We would like residents to see our department as a place where they can go for help or to help address the root causes of health inequities. And at this point, I should say that the resident engagement, the roundtables, will be organized by our staff work groups, which I'm going to describe in just a moment. And the reason that they're going to be organized by our staff work groups is because we want stakeholders to build relationships with the staff who will be responsible for moving our policy agenda forward, as well as we want to create staff ownership around the process. Finally, we'll ensure that our resident feedback is incorporated into our work by adjusting our policy assessment tools to account for what the feedback that we're given. And one example of this is that, for instance, with land use, a lot of our work has been focused on new developments and zoning. However, if the most important land use issue for residents is location of toxic release sites, then our policy agenda and our policy assessment tools would therefore be adjusted to account for that. Okay, I have 1 minute. I'm going to speed it up. So community and government organization engagement. We're going to have participation from experts and local and regional organizations, and our goals are to identify potential policies and strategies and, again, build relationships. The reason I say potential is because, of course, any policy that's suggested by experts that we engage with is not necessarily going to be incorporated on the agenda if it doesn't meet our policy criteria. And most importantly, staff engagement. We're going to have policy area specific roundtables. Work groups. So for each policy area, we're going to have staff work groups, and these staff work groups are going to have participants from across the department. And the purpose of this is to really break out of our silos, make sure this is not a project with just a few staff working on it, but really has input from across the department. And again, we're going to have staff self-identify, and the reason for having staff self-identify and using a more democratic process for participation is because we wanted to account for the fact that supervisors may not know staff interests, and that some supervisors may be more likely to communicate this opportunity to their staff than others. However, a participation in the work groups is contingent on supervisor approval. And finally, we're offering various levels of participant engagement. So staff who have less time can still be engaged in the policy work either through regular updates or attending meetings as they can. The difference in terms of how they will be able to participate is only staff who can participate on a consistent basis and take responsibility from meeting to meeting will be able to participate in all decision making. Okay, so some of the output that we're going to see, the initial tasks are trainings. They're going to go through policy advocacy and analysis training, as well as issue area orientations. Then they're going to use the roundtable results, like I said, to finalize the policy platform and policy criteria, apply the policy criteria to potential policies, and release the local policy agenda. And then long-term, they obviously will be responsible for implementing the local policy agenda, coordinating with state and federal policy efforts through our legislative council, like I mentioned earlier, engaging stakeholders in the policy work, and responding to requests for policy development, analysis, and expert testimony. So being both proactive and reactive. So that will be our local policy agenda. Really quickly, in terms of the structure for implementation, there will be these work groups that I just described. They'll have a coordinator who is really responsible for progress and coordinates responses to community requests and ensures resident engagement in our policy work, as well as serves as our liaison to the Legislative Council. Then we have a Place Matters leadership team that provides guidance on the boundaries of the policy work and includes representatives from each area, as well as other stakeholders. Some of the guidelines for our policy activity, like I mentioned earlier, it's obviously tricky moving into the policy work. And so we're trying to really kind of make sure that there are some guidelines that we have that we want to keep in mind. So obviously one is assess policies for health impacts. That's where we are experts and that's where we're most credible, and so that's where our work should be focused. Again, we also need to be strategic. We have to know when a health argument is the most compelling argument to make and when maybe another argument is the most compelling argument to make. And then offer criteria for evaluating alternative solutions. So rather than getting really engaged in political struggles over one solution over another, offering different criteria to evaluate each. And finally, don't forget that it's political. And a few unresolved questions in wrapping up. We have not exactly finalized what our continuous engagement mechanisms are, and that's something that we're really struggling with. How are we going to engage our residents, community stakeholders on a continuous basis in a way that we have capacity for, but is also meaningful? Some other areas, I'll just skip to the last one. What we're really interested in figuring out is, does using a health frame influence policy decisions? So like I said in my example earlier with the bus fares, we heard from decision makers that it influenced their decision. However, we have not figured out a way to really track that over time, and so we want to know more about that so that we can be strategic and target our work better. Okay, thank you.
Thank you, Alex. Our next presenter is Risa Webb, Project Director from John Snow Incorporated.